It is a new era in the Rebel Room, and what a week to have a new era. Big things going on at UNLV this week. I'm Case Kiefer, as always, joined by Las Vegas Suns, Ray Brewer, and for the first time, Mike Romala, new UNLV beat writer for Las Vegas Sun, LasVegasSun.com. Welcome, Mike. Glad to have you aboard.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
For sure. So a lot of talking points this week. UNLV, UNR football. This is what Brewer, I think this has come up every week on the podcast this year. Brewer's promising that the Rebels are going to smash the Wolfpack. Are you still feeling as confident going into Saturday afternoon?
I mean, am I confident? Yes. Am I skeptical? Possibly. I thought Reno did a great job on Saturday. They overcame a pretty good deficit against Utah State and won at home. So Reno's going to have some momentum. But bottom line is they can't stop the run. And the only thing UNLV can do is run the ball. And for me, if UNLV does what they say they could do, both teams aren't going to a bowl. So this is kind of the bowl game. There's a trophy. Emotions will be high. UNLV hasn't won the Cannon at home since 2000, whatever. It's been a minute. I just don't see UNLV losing this game. Everything they've built toward, if they want to keep the positive momentum for recruiting, which Sanchez says is his, that's his thing, right? You got to win this game. You got to show your improvements. You got to win the Cannon game, and you got to make it look sexy doing so.
Now, how many? I'll just jump in. Like how many passes do you think UNLV has to complete to win this game?
That's a good question.
Their top wide receiver is a defensive back, and their number two wide receiver is a quarterback. How many are they going to have to complete to beat this team?
I mean, well, I haven't watched a lot of Reno, unfortunately. Of course, I've followed them. But if this rush defense is as bad as you think, maybe they only have to complete a handful. I mean, maybe they just gash them. Maybe they just have to complete, like, eight passes.
They gave up Cal Poly rush for, like, 300-and-some yards against Reno. Cal Poly.
Cal
Poly beat Reno in Reno.
UNLV completed 10 passes against Boise State last week, and they scored 25 points. So, I mean, the rushing offense can definitely carry most of the load. I think you just might get into, is there a situation where Reno can just throw whatever, 9-10 guys at the line of scrimmage and completely force you to throw the ball? And does that hinder your game plan in any way? Or is UNLV just gonna roll over them no matter what?
I think that it just looks like if Reno has the personnel and they come up with a scheme that could do that, I think that's how I think you're painting the picture of how UNLV could be in trouble, is if they force you to throw the ball. We know that UNLV's passing offense isn't setting anything on fire. I will say the difference between Kurt Palandek this year and last year, he looks way better to me. He looks like he's at least not going to kill you. But that being said, I don't think the problem's him now. The problem's the receivers, because who's going to catch the ball? Also wondering about injuries. I know, Mike, you were on duty for the Boise State game, so you got to see that. Brewer and I weren't. I'm sure we were following it. Lexington Thomas didn't play again, correct?
Yeah, he's still out.
I mean, they've got plenty of guys in the backfield, so I think they should be able to run the ball. The question is, can Nevada, Reno, for Brewer's sake, can they load up the box and make them throw the ball? What do you think? Is that what's concerning you?
I mean, I think if Reno were to load up the box, if they were going to say, okay, we haven't been able to stop the run all year, and that's because every team we've played has had a competent quarterback, and we've needed to keep our safeties and secondaries back. And now that Reno doesn't have that Vegas doesn't have a quarterback, we're going to load our entire team and we're going to dare you to run on us. I think UNLV could still run on them because Charles Williams is going to be a go. He'll be ready. David Green's a beast playing in his last game. I don't care if Lexington plays or not. Palandek with the read option is one of your fastest guys, if not your fastest guy. I think they're still going to be able to run the ball, but now you're telling me that you're going to put your DBs in single coverage with no safety. I don't care who you are. If you're a Division I quarterback, you should be able to throw a pitch and catch, a slant, to a guy to take it to the house. I don't care. Hell yeah, you should be. You better
have
be.
Have you seen the UNLV quarterbacks?
I'm not so much talking about Palinuk, because I agree with Kays. I think he's been pretty good this year in what we've seen of him.
He's been serviceable,
like,
please.
I don't think Palinuk is your problem on offense. I think your problem is you're throwing to guys. Yes, you should be able to win one-on-one coverage. If you're in one-on-one all game long, you should win a lot of those routes. But these are guys that haven't run a lot of routes. Jericho Flowers is a defensive back, and he's a true freshman defensive back who's made the switch a month ago. Dalton Sneed's played quarterback for the last 2 years. He made the switch, what, 8 days ago? How many out routes has Dalton Sneed run? How many slants has Dalton Sneed run in his entire life? Like, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to beat one-on-one coverage all day long consistently.
Well, I mean, I totally don't disagree. Hopefully, Malachi Stevenson gets in the mix, a freshman who's been good at times. To Flowers' credit, I get it. He was a third-string DB. I wasn't high on him either. He did score twice against Wyoming. He had the big catch in overtime. You know, he's serviceable. We're talking two teams that are, let's be honest, pretty average to below average. The scores resemble the WAC. UNLV gave up 500 yards against Hawaii, 500 yards against Colorado State, 66 points, and God knows how many yards against Wyoming. This isn't going to be a nip-and-tuck game. I think this is going to be 50-40 type of scoring. I think both teams aren't going to be able to really stop each other. They've shown no history of doing that. And I just think that UNLV, with the home field advantage, picking up some chunks of yard on the ground. And remember, it's only going to take one completion.
Yeah. And what we saw against Boise was one of the ways that they mitigated those issues at wide receiver was they threw the tight ends more. Tim Holt had a long fourth down conversion. Andrew Price had a couple long completions. He had a long touchdown. I think he finished with 60-something receiving yards. So they worked the tight ends a little bit more into the passing game. So that may be something they do to help patch up on some of their third down conversions when they need to pass. But for the most part, staying on the ground seems to be the way to go against this Reno defense.
And I think maybe I just got lucky because it was the two games I was at were the only two big games he's had in this department this year. But I thought that Xavier Campbell, if I'm saying his name right, I thought he kind of gives you a pass-catching option out of the backfield. I think he had caught a touchdown pass one of the games I was at, a couple catches another. It doesn't look like he did anything against Boise State, but when Brewer was running down the running backs, he didn't even mention him. I think that is one place where UNLV kind of has an embarrassment of riches. Like, they have some guys that can pick up some yards on the ground.
They have a stable of running. Lexington Thomas is their best runner. If he's out for this game, again, they do have enough other backs back there to take handoffs and run. As to the pass catching, that's sort of been an issue all year that we sort of expecting them to work those guys into the passing game more, but they haven't. And at one point, Tony Sanchez, just in one of his weekly pressers, he was asked about throwing the ball to the running backs more, and he said something along the lines of, "We don't have natural pass catchers back there." I mean, they tried to work Lexington Thomas in, and he dropped a couple balls. I think they've thrown a handful of screens to David Green, but they don't have the type of guys like a Pumphrey that you can line up. You can split them out in the slot and let them run receiver routes. So, like, the passing game, I don't know if it's going to go through the running backs as much as, like, the tight ends and whatever else you can patch together with the receivers who are left.
I think they're going to be able to score. I think the game's going to be determined by, are they going to be able to stop Reno enough? If they, could fool Reno, if they could trick Reno, if they could somehow stop them, then, and special teams has been awful. They're not getting good field position. They're giving up long runs. If they could shore up special teams defense, I think they're going to be able to score. For me, the game's going to be determined on, is UNLV going to give up 500 yards and 50 points, or are they going to be able to give up 380 yards and 30 points and let its offense win the game? And, of course, what's at stake? Okay, last year you won three games. If you win Saturday, you're a 5-win team, right? One game away from a bowl game, that Idaho game, arguably, right? You've got the cannon both years. Things are going in the right direction. The players are bigger and stronger. They've done the fundraising. The classes are starting to get balanced. You remember they came in the, I think it's the junior class right now, was Houck's last year, or when he thought he was going to get fired, and they somehow won a bowl game, and he only signed like 11 guys, and you know, you see with the wide, you know, last year they had one tight end for the last game against Wyoming. You know, this year they're running out of scholarship wide receivers, or last spring practice they didn't have many scholarship wide receivers to throw the ball to. So I think that everything behind the scenes is on the up and up right direction, but you just need to win this game. You win this game, you get positive momentum for recruiting, positive momentum for the offseason, and you could start building yourself as a bowl team next year. You lose this game, people are going to be like, okay.
And I know you're actually the same way, not just people. You're saying they have to win this game. This is the most important game there's been in years. What I guess I'm wondering is that really fair?
Hell yeah, to pin this much on one game. I mean, shoot, is Ohio State Michigan? Michigan's had a great year, right? Michigan, University
of
Michigan.
This is a little bit different. This is a little bit different parallel.
You lose to Ohio State, I don't care. Then you haven't done anything. This is the one game. Listen, go back to the athletics at UNLV. It's a basketball school. Basketball wins games. The only time people care about football is this one week.
My biggest problem with this,
and it's a home game.
I'm calling you out.
Every
is
other year.
If they lose this game, you will have a list of excuses for why Tony, you shouldn't be harsh on Tony Sanchez.
I'm a Tony Sanchez apologist, but I just think that this is the game, right? You haven't won the Canaan at home in forever. This is the only game people care about. There. You win this game, people are going to be interested in what you do in the off season, right? You could have a new stadium being built. You're luring in better players, right? You were second behind Boise State in recruiting last year.
No, I'm with you that you do kind of get that feeling where UNLV football is right now and where they've been in the recent past is your season record is either 1-0 or 0-1 because it is sort of the only game that people are following beforehand and sort of getting up for. So on the season, you're 1-0 if you win that game, you're 0-1 if you lose it, and that's really the only game that matters. I think winning this game at least gives you a chance to change that going into next year. Like you said, you're on the verge of bowl eligibility, and you can bring that into the next season sort of saying, look how close we are, and we're moving in the right direction because you're going from 3 wins to 5 wins. You're winning that rivalry game. You're 2-0 against your in-state rivals. That's like tangible improvement that Tony Sanchez can use to sort of spread that, to build that buzz around the program going into the third year. So from that point, it does kind of hinge on this game where if they lose it, you're sort of throwing a bucket of water on everything you may have accomplished.
And you don't want your last memory of the team to be losing at home to Reno, a Reno team that, listen, Reno has had a streak of going to some bowl games and good records. This is a historically bad Reno team that you saw Chris Ault's players are finally bled out of the program, and it's all Polian now.
Yeah,
you don't want to lose to this guy and this guy's players and program.
Yeah, I mean, aside from all the rivalry stuff, just losing this game would be a really bad loss just because Reno is so bad, and this is a game where you're a home favorite, which UNLV is not favored in many games. Like, yeah, so blowing a home game when you're a huge favorite to a really bad team would be a horrible way to end the year, even if you just strip away all the rivalry stuff. So, yeah, that's sort of what gets lost in the rivalry talk, is that this is just a game that you should win.
I definitely agree with you guys in general. I just had to get Brewer going for a little bit there. UNLV up to as high as a 9-point favorite. I think it's been 13 or 14 years since they've been this big of a favorite against Reno. So pretty jarring to see that. And I don't think highly of this Reno team at all. I know at the beginning of the year when we went through the schedule, I picked the Cannon to go back blue. Definitely having regrets on that. I mean, yeah, great comeback last week. You beat Utah State, who's also having a historically bad year for their standards, by 1 point to break a 4-game losing streak. I'm just not high on Reno right now. I think we're all in agreement that UNLV should win this game. Last thing on the subject. I know we've said this before, but I think right after the Idaho loss, we were like, man, this is going to come back to bite them. I just feel like this game would be so much more exciting if this was for a 6th win. Idaho in overtime. Come on.
That would have been the perfect setup for this. Just the perfect convergence of everything. The rivalry game, last game of the season, playing. It would be a de facto playoff game for UNLV. That would have been the perfect scenario. And you can point to games that you think they should have won, or San Jose State, or Idaho, where they were driving down at the end of regulation to even go for the win and then ended up losing in overtime. Yeah, when you come that close, there's a lot of different things you can point to throughout the season if you want to frustrate Ray and point to all the little things that could have gotten you that one extra win.
For sure. All right, well, another UNLV team on a winning streak, believe it or not, after the Runnin' Rebels dropped their opener to South Alabama a couple weeks ago. They've now beaten two California schools, Riverside and Fullerton. I didn't get to see much of either game, so I'll leave it to you guys. What do you make of where UNLV is right now? Is there a little more optimism now that they've won a couple in a row?
They didn't look horrible. They won both games last week. There was a lot of doom and gloom coming into the season. You know, how are they even going to field a team? That kind of stuff. I think just at least winning those two games kind of puts that worst case scenario behind you. You don't have to worry about this team being embarrassingly bad or one of the worst teams in the country. It's not going to be anything like that. They're probably going to end up being a run-of-the-mill, middle-of-the-pack Mountain West team, which is not great, but it's not something that you have to hang your head about. I mean, this is you're changing coaches. It's a rebuilding year. So it's not going to be – you don't have to worry about the worst-case scenario at this point. I think that's an optimistic thing for fans. You can sort of relax a little bit and kind of enjoy this team for what it is.
And I think, you know, I've only been to the one game, but the thing that stood out for me, Mike, Case, was the energy and fight this team had. It's a team that really, you could tell, so they lose the South Alabama game, the game that I went to, and, you know, the locker room was described as devastating. It resembled how a locker room is when you're eliminated from the league tournament. And you could tell that these guys really have a burden of not being awful, that they know that folks are saying this team could be historically bad and that, you know, this team is a shell of what it was in previous years with you know, Dave Rice. They've had six or seven guys make the NBA. And there's some real nice pieces on this team that I like. The Christian Jones kid has been about as darn good as you could be. Reminds me of Warren Rosegreen, grabs every rebound, shooting at a high percentage, big body, doesn't make any stupid mistakes, right? I thought Dwayne Morgan was better. I mean, Dwayne Morgan, 2 years of his body was out of control, he fouled a lot, he came in briefly recovering from an injury, and he was as good as Dwayne Morgan's ever been. And if you want to find little battles, to me those are some pieces that are starting to feel okay.
Yeah, Christian Jones, definitely a good – I think if you get a senior grad transfer like that, that's sort of what you're hoping for, a guy who can come in and sort of patch a hole for you. I'd feel better about the team if Dwayne Morgan and Christian Jones were battling each other for one spot instead of having one of them play center and the other one play power forward. Your team was a little bit deeper in the front court, and you had those two guys sort of competing internally and, you know, letting the best man win. I think that would be better. But, I mean, this is what they have, and they're rolling with it. Christian Jones has been good. Morgan has he's still a talented guy. Like, he was disappointing his first few years, but he was the guy that was a top 40 recruit.
Could have been a McDonald's All-American.
Yeah, he's an athletic guy. There are things that he can do. I mean, offensively, he's not a guy you're going to run your offense through, but defensively, I think he's with the right coaching. If he can learn to keep that fouling under control, a guy who could still, this year and next year, be sort of an impact player on that end of the floor. So, yeah, that's where this year you want to see that individual development from players, I think, is one of the most important things to watch, and Morgan is one of those guys. He's at the top of the list of development,
and he's long. And the Chris Clyborn kid, he's been banged up, but we know that he could score. We know he's going to be able to put the ball in the hole, or at least we think he can. And that's another good piece moving forward. The one kid who I expected more, and to flip to things I'm worried about, I just don't think they have. The backcourt worries me. Inexperienced together, inexperienced individually overall. Even though the Mooring kid was good, he made his free throws. He was aggressive. He had a great game on Saturday against Florton. The Baxter kid, the top four-star recruit, he's a slow start. And it's tough for me to say, okay, he's a first-year college player, a week into his career, and I'm already hitting the freaking panic button on that kid because he was supposed to be like the linchpin moving forward.
Well, the thing for Baxter is this team is not deep at all, but as we just said, the one position where they are kind of deep is power forward, where they have Christian Jones, who's a natural power forward, and Dwayne Morgan, who's a natural power forward. and that's where Troy Baxter plays. So he's the one guy who is sort of there is a depth chart at his position. So he's the one guy that where minutes just aren't up for grabs. So he's going to have to earn it. He's going to have to play. He's going to have to either outplay Dwayne Morgan or outplay Christian Jones if he wants significant minutes at that spot. And that's just tough for a true freshman to do because those are two experienced. Again, on a team that doesn't have a lot of experience, those two guys are experienced. Christian Jones, a fifth-year senior. Dwayne Morgan's a third-year junior. So like that's minutes aren't just going to be given to Troy Baxter because he's a top recruit. And though he is a sort of a cornerstone player where you need him to develop and become a star eventually, you can't just give him minutes this year at the expense of two guys who are probably, you know, better and more ready to help you win right now.
For me, the Christian Jones.
So don't freak out just yet on Troy Baxter.
No, I've already. I mean, I make a first opinion on somebody, Mike. You don't know this, and it is a tough cross.
The
to
kids
bear
played
for that
like
person.
8 minutes a game.
Yeah, pretty bad. At
He's
eight
probably
minutes.
What like 19 years old.
I'm not
or something,
into the plus. I'm
old.
Not into Mike is Mr. Plus Minus. I don't even know how to calculate that. But I bet you his plus minus is the worst on the team.
He was.
It's not a very big sample size
go
yet.
Go back and look at it. But he was pretty good in the exhibitions before Morgan came back. You know, when he was getting minutes, he looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a guy who's going from being a high school senior to a, you know, this is true freshman year. He's still got a lot to learn. Like I wouldn't
sure
expect him to be. He's not of the caliber of like an Anthony Bennett guy who's so good, so talented. You expect him to come in and make an impact right away. Like he's a guy you give him a year or two.
Yeah,
I think maybe Brewer's concerns. Maybe that just speaks to like some of the more wider UNLV fan base. You're just used to having these guys come in that are already seasoned. They're already going to see flashes of. It's going to take a second.
You got four stars next to your name. I expect you to at least score 4 points, right?
No, but that's
he probably
point.
Would
like
score 4 points. Are if he played more than 8 minutes, 6 minutes,
yeah,
he
like,
would score more than 4 points.
Guys like Zimmerman and Rashad Vaughn, they were obvious like one and done guys and like top level recruits. So you knew you basically recruited them by telling them you're going to be a starter for this team. I don't think that that's how they got Troy Baxter. I don't think they told Troy Baxter like you're going to be a starter or you're going to play this many minutes. I think that he's just not on the level of those guys. And UNLV fans, like you said, Case, maybe kind of conditioned to expect these big bang mm-hmm. freshmen to come out right away. But that's just I don't think that's what Baxter is.
Okay, so we've seen two games played in front of about 9,800 fans a night, probably 2,000 less than that. What does this team need to do to get people to go watch them play? Because looking at the photos, like, makes me sick to my stomach. I mean, there's, like, rows and rows of empty seats on the lower bowl, which is – unlike UNLV, even you could argue like during the Spoonhauer days when they were just kind of getting the engine reared back up.
Well, I've only been here for 4 years. This is my fifth season covering the team, so I've always heard that it's a winner's town. People
sure.
will support them if they win. I've been here for 4 years. I can only recall maybe two or three home games where I felt like it was full and rocking. I mean, at the beginning of the 2012 season, the season opener was pretty loud and boisterous. They played when they beat Arizona 2 years ago at home and they stormed the court. That was a pretty big crowd where I felt the crowd actually affected the game and impacted what was happening on the court. But besides that, like I haven't really experienced the, mm-hmm. the Thomas and Mack at full strength that people talk mm-hmm. about. So I don't know if I can really speak to that as well. Not, to me, the difference between 9,000 that they're getting now and the 13,000 that they were getting the last 2 years, I don't sense that much of a difference because the crowd always never seemed that great to me.
It's about $40,000. That's the difference.
Yeah. But yeah,
as far as in the game,
listen to this though. You add up that 40,000 10 times. Now you got $500,000, right? Or 400,000, but you're close to $500,000 with interest in popcorn sales. Now your whole programs are hurt.
Yeah, but in terms of energy, it never seemed like that. I haven't been here at a time when the fans were consistently bringing
sure.
energy to the game. Right? So, like, I don't know if I can – an NCAA tournament run would bring people back, maybe not even before, but the year after.
But say they go – so right now they're 2-1, right? They play TCU. They're going to beat NAU. They'll be 3-1. They're going to lose to TCU. They'll be 3-2. They beat Western Kentucky. They're 4-2. And then they go to SUU, coin flip maybe. I mean, could this team get out of league play four games over 500 or at a non-league game play four games, five games over 500?
I mean, if you look at the schedule, they could do that, but is four games over 500 enough to incite like a rush to the ticket counter?
If they beat Kansas at home, if they beat Duke at T-Mobile,
I think those games will have big crowds. But even if they beat Duke, I don't think the next home game or the next two or three home games are going to be that much affected by it. It's like I think it's going to take more to win.
If they beat Duke, we give Marvin Menzies a street. We name a street after Marvin.
But again, home game after Duke is Incarnate Word, so probably not going to be.
Well, there's a W.
Yeah, but if they beat Kansas, that would be going into league play.
They're not.
Maybe that could be something that would boost.
Who do they got a better chance to beat, Kansas or Duke?
I guess Kansas, assuming Duke, all those guys are back.
At Oregon, no chance.
Yeah, I think they're all probably about the same. I think we're like you can make a strong argument for either of them, but you could probably convince me of it.
I'd love to see them win one of the four.
I've watched all three of those teams. I think Oregon is a step below the other two, but of course it's on the road. Kansas, though, you're getting in your own building.
I think that game's in Portland, though, the Oregon game.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
Neutral,
okay,
yeah,
well,
but yeah,
still
on the road.
Yeah.
I guess if you asked me to pick one, I might go Duke.
God, if they beat Duke, I'd be the happiest. I swear to you, you would not be able to contain me that night.
Yeah.
I'd be having Appletini shots on the strip by myself.
Duke, they have some veteran players that are key contributors, but they also have a mix of freshmen that they're counting on and guys that are mm-hmm. a little bit younger. So maybe the fact that you get them on the road early in the season, it's on the strip, so it's sort of a big game. Maybe UNLV gets up, hits a few shots. You could see it maybe like working up, but I don't think that's...
Yeah, and banged up, I think, if you're making the Duke case. Like, who knows who all is going to be playing in this game? Their whole roster's hurt. I guess...
Jeter got carried off the court, I think, in their last game.
Well, that doesn't help us any. We need him in there because he's been awful.
That's a little awful. Might be a little harsh.
He's been... I watched the KU. Did you watch the KU game?
Yeah.
He's a designated fouler.
He had a pretty good first half against KU. He made, like, his first four shots.
Did he?
Yeah.
I just saw when he... went for a dunk and he got blocked by the rim.
Yeah, there are some rough moments. I don't think he's turned out. This is another kid, though, that's young and I think is taking more time than the Duke fan. This isn't a Duke podcast, but I think it just takes – the kid's still what? I think he just turned 19. He might not turn 19 till November. I think he's just going to take a little while to come around. I said Kansas just basically because it's at their home floor. Obviously, I went to Kansas, so I know the team real well, watched them. I just feel like right now they kind of play like a little more high-variant style. I don't know. I could see them winning that game, and I wouldn't be absolutely shocked. But either way, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I guess final word, what are we looking for this week? You already kind of previewed a Brewer, NAU. You're expecting a win. Then they have TCU and either Washington or Western Kentucky, probably if they pull off the upset, Washington. But you know, what constitutes success? What do we need to see this week from this team?
You know, I think success would be going 2-0. Listen, TCU's not a world beater. I mean, they're the worst team in the Big 12. Now they've got Jamie Dixon, who's a decent coach, and some good pieces, especially the one who's supposed to be our point guard. But, I mean, I think they're beatable. I mean, for me, a successful weekend is 2-0. A B weekend.
2-1, right? So they got three games.
Well, I thought you just meant Friday, Saturday.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming they're going to beat Northern Arizona.
Oh, you want them to win both the games in this tournament?
Well, I mean,
if they
why
beat
not?
TCU, they're going to have to beat Washington. That's two games in a row. You're an underdog
and
on.
And you're building, though.
Okay, I say no way they go 2-0.
Okay, but I'm saying TCU's beatable. I think an A would be 2-0. You beat TCU, you put up a good fight against Washington. You don't crap out a good fight. A B would be you beat TCU, lose to Washington. A C is you're good to TCU, but you lose and you beat Western Kentucky. And if you go 0-2, then it's in your building. You got to win these games. I mean, TCU's not great. Am I missing something?
No, I think they're probably somewhere in that 50 to 60 range in terms of the national
So 100
rankings.
Spots better than UNLV.
So like, you don't want to get blown out because that's sort of the way the fans are looking at it is probably, oh, this is the first like real team that this is the first team that we're playing. This is the first real legitimate Division I competition. So if you take the court for the first time in the fans' eyes and get blown out in that game, that's going to sort of reinforce some of the thoughts that this team UNLV is not worth following this year, or you don't really. You know, this season is a lost season or a throwaway. So, yeah, playing that game tight or at least being competitive is probably the base. That's probably the the least you can do to sort of keep whatever momentum you have to keep that going.
What's the number going to be in the game, the betting number? TCU 3?
I was thinking 4.5 if you would have had me said it before you said that. It's probably right around there. I mean, probably not higher than 6, right?
I would.
You think so?
6.5.
Okay, 6.5.
But I know nothing about gambling. All right,
I would probably say. I think sometimes even like I think the odds makers might even adjust a little. Possibly more than you might think for this being on their home floor. So I'm going to stick with like 4-ish, but we'll see. Either way, I think they're an underdog in that game, and if they play Washington, they're an underdog too. I don't know anything about Western Kentucky, but should be interesting. I think you got to be happy with picking up these two wins, even if they didn't look great, because I think people are ready to panic even more after the South Alabama game. That will do it for this week of the Rebel Room. We'll be back next week to talk about all of the things we just discussed, wrapping up.